Session number 776.
Mr. Turco Stevens, Reel 5. You were just going to tell me, Mr. Stevens, whether the NCO's mess and the other rank's mess in India were closer together or farther apart than they were in England?
I think more farther apart.
In India?
In India, yeah. Because the NCOs more or less had to keep to themselves and the other ranks. There was a duty NCO who used to visit the men's mess and the corporal's mess and also the sergeant's mess. He was known as the orderly sergeant.
Why did they have to keep further apart, the NCOs, in India than they did in England, do you think?
More so, I think, in the case of discipline. Discipline, not to become too friendly with each other, because there's a kind of thing, you see, that NCO, he may be the NCO in charge of a party of those, and if something had happened during the day kind of thing, it might come up and allow it to cause some disturbance.
Were they more frightened of that occurring in India than they were in England?
I don't really think they were more frightened of that, but I should think that that was one of the points, that they were really kept apart.
How did married men and their wives fit into the life in the mess and the barracks?
I think that the wives and that, they used to have these shows and that, and a wife could always go to the mess with her husband. And they're very, very friendly in the mess. Most of the sergeants and that, well, not all, but most of them, or quite a number of them, had their wives out with them. And they might make arrangements during the day or something to visit the mess. Things like that.
Were there any problems created by the fact that there was a shortage of European women? Did it cause a lot of problems for the army?
No, I don't think so, because there was, in most stations, they had married quarters, so many married quarters. And if a person applied for his wife or his girlfriend to come out to be married, if the CO considered that he had the time to serve, he'd give him permission to marry, but she'd have to come out and they'd have to marry in Bombay before returning to barracks.
Yes, but there must have been a lot of men in the army who were not married.
Oh, God, yeah.
Who were single.
Yeah.
They must have been single without any European women being about. And so, did this cause any problems with their sex life or anything like that?
I don't think so. For instance, I was out there for my first 6 years I spent in India was as a single man, and it never gave me any problems. There's no problems whatever. And I was so interested in sport and one thing and the other, but even so, I used to attend the dances, and I danced with them. And I used to, at that time when I was a single man out there, I was a junior NCO, lance corporal, and then a corporal. I promoted straight away to corporal. But I used to go to dances two or three times a week. And I used to dance with the ladies and that, but never went any further.
Mm. What about prostitution? Did any of the soldiers go after prostitutes?
Oh, yes, they did. Yeah, they used to, if they were in, there was not many of these places, these houses, there was one in Lahore, they called it the Arches in Lahore, and then there was Grant Road in Bombay, and they used to visit those a lot, quite a lot. But mind, they were out of bounds, there was always police on.
Civilian police?
Yeah. My last year in India, I was a garrison provost sergeant major, and I used to have Lance Corporal Police patrol in these houses. There was one in Rawalpindi, India, as a matter of fact. That's where I finished up, and of course you couldn't stop them all, but we used to stop them.
And was there any problem then with the venereal disease?
There was problems in that in hospital and that, but I know that there was several cases of venereal disease, and I used to, as a garrison provost sergeant major, I used to have to try and sort those out and where they used to pick it up from to prevent other troops getting it.
So you used to interview the men who'd caught it to try to find which brothels
had been caught. I had one case, I won't mention any names, but I had one case and the man was in hospital. And I went to him and I said, look here, I said, you must tell me where you picked this up. I said, I'm not considering you, whatever, I said, but I'm thinking of others. I said, you must tell me. And he told me. And it was in an house that had been occupied, an officer's quarters, and they'd all gone to the hills, you see. And I caught the bloke that... Ponce, as you call him. Mm. I caught him and he was going there with a woman. And as a matter of fact, there was two Seaforth Islanders were waiting for this woman to come with this Ponce bloke.
Mm.
And they helped me catch this bloke. And I handed him straight over. I got him and I had the tonga that was outside. I had the woman. And
you had the what?
I had this woman that he brought up.
Sorry, what was the word you used? The
Tonga.
Tonga?
That was
like, the carriage.
The carriage, pony trap. And I handed them all over to the Commissioner of Police.
Mm. So the Ponce was an Indian?
Oh, yeah.
Was the woman an Indian woman?
The woman was an Indian, yeah.
Were the prostitutes in the brothels Indian women or
Anglo-Indian? Anglo and Indian. There are all sorts in them.
Did any European... Were there any European women in the brothels?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Not from... I don't ever remember any from England, but you could see them. If you patrolled down anywhere down near them, you could see them all sitting out, you know, beckoning. And some of them were absolutely white, European.
Hmm.
But what parts of it I never knew.
What about homosexuality in the army? Did that occur because of the shortage of...
Very little, but I have known it. I knew it with a couple of them in the artillery. I have known it. But that was an offence in my time. But... this was in the Frosbore Fort I mentioned earlier. But that was the only case I ever knew. But I think it went on.
So did instances of infidelity occur because of the shortage of European women?
Let me see. If they did, they were sent home. But I should say it did go on. Oh, yes, I'm pretty sure it did go on, because I think the climate was absolutely against a woman, isn't it? that Cologne is absolutely against the woman itself in particular. But I should say yes, it'd go on, but if they were found out, then they were sent home.
Did you know of any instances where it was found out and anybody was sent home?
I can't say. I think my wife does. Mm. I think my wife. You put that question to her later.
Yes, okay. You said that you got leave at one stage, I think in 1925.
Yeah.
Did you have any entitlement to leave?
Your entitlement to leave is after 6 years. After 6 years' service in India, you're entitled to a leave in the UK. But it still counts as Indian service.
How long was it that you got?
They put it down as 6 months. They say it's 6 months leave, but you might be back. You've got to be usually back in the troop in season, which is 6 months, you see. And that might take up your time, 21 days going home, and your 21 days going back. But I've had as much as 8 months leave in the country.
After you'd had your 6 months leave, after 6 years, when would your next leave be after that?
Another 6 years.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So, did you think that this was sufficient?
Well, I could always done with more. You could always do with more, because I think the finest sight ever is coming into Southampton. You come into Southampton about 10 o'clock at night, and you disembark the next morning. You lay out in the wards outside Southampton, and you see the green fields. And to see that's the finest sight ever. Coming back to this country. There's no country like this one, you know, after being abroad.
You mean, you're saying that you miss the landscape, the green landscape,
oh,
after
definitely.
India?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everything's always so dried up, you see, out. But you don't see anything really before you get to this country. And you, as I say, you arrive at 10 o'clock at night, you see, usually about 10 o'clock at night, and you're laying out in the Southampton waters overnight, and you've been sleeping up on deck, and at daylight you see the green meadows. And then to get on off your ship and get on a train and come home from there, coming across the country, there's nothing like it.
How did you use your 6 months leave in 1925?
I used to, I went to Newbury first to stay with my uncle in 1925, and then we were married in Newbury. And then my people were living here, and we came over here. That's all, just visiting round about our relations and one thing, our roundabouts, you know.
Did the army give you any advice about how you should use your leave?
No. No.
Did they put any restrictions on your movements at all?
No. No restrictions.
Did you get any leave inside India?
Oh, yes, you could get a month a year in India itself. For instance, when we were expecting our third boy, we had three boys and a girl, but when we were expecting our third boy, we were right up in the hills, and that was in 1930, and I was in Razmak on the operations, and I had, as soon as the operations were over, I had a breakdown, and the CO came down to the signal office, because I'd been on continual watch, you see, and I had operators falling asleep on the key with the keys pressed and one to the other. And the CO came down and he said, I'm going to send Sergeant, I forget his name now, but he said, I'm sending down Sergeant so and so, I'm going to take over from you. And he said, and you can come up and go on leave up to your family. Well, my wife was expecting our third son then, and I I had 3 months leave. I was given 3 months leave. And of course I recuperated right up in the hills, and my wife and I.
What do you think caused the breakdown?
Well, lack of sleep. We were on continuous watch, you see, and I was the only senior NCO in charge of communications, and the message and that were piling up so much that if I had to keep awake, because some of the fellows were all overtired in that, you see, and I'd go along to a fellow on a set, and he'd have a message there, and the key was pressed, you see, so I would just look at this message, I'd give him a shake, I'd say, now go on outside and have a walk around. And that would put him, absolutely wake him up, see. I'd go outside and I'd get over, do a bit of operating, you see, I'd send his message for him. And he'd come back in, and he'd get down on the set again, he'd be all right.
This was during the operations.
That was during the operations.
At Razmak.
Yeah.
The Waziristan operation.
Yeah, in Waziristan.
So the reason why all this pressure was put on you was because they were short-staffed?
Yes, you could say that, but I was short-staffed even on operators, you see. I didn't have the relief in British operators. Of course, you couldn't take on Indian operators with the Morse code. Although they were good on heliograph, they were good on flag, and they were good on semaphore. The Indians, but you, not for wireless operating.
Which stations did you prefer for leave?
What, in India?
In India.
The Murray Hills. I used to arrange it to have with your families and that. And your families, they go up in bulk up into the about 7,000 feet up, you see. Go up into Murray, different stations in Murray, in the Murray Hills, and that's where we used to go up for our leave. Now, the single man, he used to go to there was a UNIAC, what they call the UNIAC Club in Murray itself.
UNIAC?
Yeah.
Not Union Jack. UNIAC?
Union Jack. Union Jack Club. Mm-hmm. That's right, in Murray. Well, they used to go up there. The single men and that used to go up and they'd book in to the Union Jack Club, you see.
Was Murray a big hill station or small?
Oh, quite a big hill station. Yes, quite a big hill station.
Why did you prefer it? Because it was cooler or...?
Well, it was 7,000 odd feet up, and if you went up in the summer months from the plains, see, the temperatures used to go so high and down on the plains.
Is it cooler than other hill stations?
Well, no, not really. There was one place where I went up, there was 14,000 feet up, you see. That was out at Kanspur, right out nearly to Kashmir, right out that way. Well, my wife was out there, and, well, that was really a lovely place, really. Of course, there's always something going on in the hill stations, and you've got all the families all around about, you know, and there's life going on all the time around there.
Was there any special reason why you preferred Murray to the other hill stations, though?
No, not really. When I was out there single, I was I've been in other ones. I was up in Ranikot, a place called Ranikot up in the hills, and a place called Dalhousie, and you can see Mount Everest in the distance, you know.
What were married quarters like?
Married quarters were just the same as an ordinary barrack room. There was nothing there. You were just given an old wooden table and two or three chairs. And to make it comfortable, that you wired it. Because if you wired it the same as the messes that wired their furniture. To make yourself comfortable, you hire a settee, perhaps in a couple of chairs, easy chairs, to make your quarters. They were just like sergeant's bunks in some cases.
So they were very sparsely furnished.
Oh, yes.
And you had to hire
furniture
to make it at all.
Because, you see, when you moved from one station to another, you only had a few boxes and that. You could be overloaded in your stuff. You were only allowed so much to travel about with. You can't take furniture and that about with you on going from station to station.
You never had married quarters in Britain, did you?
No.
No, so you can't compare them.
I couldn't compare them with Britain, no.
So what kind of home life could you and your wife make for yourselves and your children in these married quarters?
Well, we had a radio. As a matter of fact, I, with another sergeant major, when I was on the frontier with another sergeant major, we built a radio, and it cost us about 150 rupees between us, and I gave him half of it, and I bought it off him. I gave him the other half after we got it made, and I used to take the football results from England.
You could get England?
I could get England on what they called the Empire Programme. And
This was an overseas broadcasting thing
for
the Empire. Or
yes.
Was it for the troops or for the whole of the Empire?
The Empire. And I could pick up the Taj Mahal Hotel at Bombay. I had different coils, you know. I could make the coils, six pin coils used to fit down in a little slot, and only about 2.5 turn, and I used to pick up 19 metres. And I used to pick up England on 19, 21 and 31 metres. I used to pick up England. We were 5.5 hours ahead of
England.
British time, see? And at 8:30, it'd be 3 o'clock. See? 3 o'clock here in England, kick-off time. And I used to sit there. My wife had gone up to a dance. I remember I took the result. My wife was up in the sergeant's mess, up in the hills, and I was I think it was Bolton Wanderers. Now, I wouldn't be sure of this. I think it was Bolton Wanderers and Portsmouth. Anyhow, I took the result, and I took all the football results and this cup, and I took it up the mess, and I told them, you know, in the interval, this bloke said he's got the result of the cup lined up. It was funny.
Stop press.
Yes.
What were the programmes which were broadcasted in
music.
India like?
Music.
From the Indian stations?
Oh, the dances and things. They used to have real dance music, that coming from the Taj Mahal in Bombay. And, you know, real, what should I say, for Europeans, no Europeans not in there.
Taj Mahal Hotel in
London.
You could get programs which were broadcast in India.
Yes.
Which were very good to listen to. I mean, it wasn't in all Indian music.
Or oh, no, no. I could pick up that Indian stuff. Mm.
But they had other things which were
but
more
they
suitable
had other
to Europe.
Yes. Like real British music we were getting.
About your children in India, how well provided for were they as far as education went in India? Were you satisfied with the education?
No, I wasn't really satisfied because they only went in the morning. And there was an army educational Sergeant used to teach them, you see. It was just an army education. Mind they didn't do bad. I don't say they did badly, but it was only in the morning because the afternoons and that you get to what they only went mornings. I wasn't satisfied with the education. That was one of the reasons why I applied to have my wife. I got it on compassionate grounds, education for the children.
And I for got your wife to go back to England.
My wife to come back to England before I did.
What was the emphasis in the education in the army? What was the main things that they emphasised?
History, I think, mostly. But they didn't get a proper education. As a matter of fact, I got them back here. My eldest son was 11 when he came back, but he's done very well since, because he went to the school. He went to this school in Rotten here, and he got on very well at the school and picked up quite a lot, but he educated himself well afterwards and that. And then he went on courses and that, and he got onto the post office eventually. He's now.
But in the army education, your wife, I think, was telling me that she thought that they emphasised sports and physical education too much.
A lot of physical. A lot of physical for children, yeah.
Did you think there was too much yourself?
Well, I don't think you never have too much physical training.
What about their health? Was the children's health looked after in the army all right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The children's health was good. We had our youngest son had malaria. And, but he wasn't too bad. We never had any real serious troubles with him, with the exception of the eldest when he went out first. That was when my wife came out first. He had a diarrhea, and he was 10 months, he was 22 pounds, and he went down to about 11 in weight. He had what they termed out there as a green diarrhea.